Welcome to CPAC Today in Politics. Coming up, the Prime Minister says he wants to meet with China's president at the G20 summit.
And we are going to highlight that processes and the engagement that Canada has with the world and the way China should engage with the world needs to remain following the rules, principles, and values that we've all agreed to.
Why did Andrew Scheer turn down an invitation to attend D-Day ceremonies in Normandy?
Going to an honorary degree ceremony, which they'll barely even be visible, certainly doesn't seem like very good politics.
And Ontario's premier denies that he's trying to help the federal Conservatives by taking a five-month break.
Can the premier tell us whether he's taking this five-month vacation because he plans to campaign for the Conservatives, or is it because the one thing that Andrew Scheer desperately needs to shore up falling poll numbers is for the people to see much, much less of this premier?
It's Friday, June the 7th. I'm Mark Sutcliffe. Let's get right to the top political stories this morning. I'm joined by author and op-ed columnist for the Chronicle Herald, Dan Legere. Good morning, Dan.
Hi, Mark.
The Prime Minister is saying that he wants to meet with President Xi of China and try to make some progress on resolving the dispute between our two countries, which, of course, involves the United States as well. Do you think that is a logical next step?
Well, I guess yes, on many ways it is, because it seems that right now Canada-China relations are at a low point that I can't recall in many, many years, certainly not since the overall liberalization of the Chinese economy back in the 1990s. And you'll recall Canada was one of the first major Western democracies to get a foot in the door there. You know, and this whole battle over Meng Wanzhou, the senior executive of Huawei Communications, and this extradition issue and the American role, I mean, it's become, you know, and they have two of our people, you know, in jail under very weird circumstances. So maybe it is time for an intervention at the top level. But I personally don't think you'll see it happen anytime soon, because I think this is one of the ways that the Chinese would assert their, shall we say, dominant or certainly more powerful position over Canada. And by holding the Prime Minister at bay, this is one way of expressing that type of, the imbalance in the power between the two countries.
Now, former Prime Minister Brian Mulroney was suggesting that another former Prime Minister, Jean Chrétien, should be sent to China to try to win the release of the Canadian detainees there. I find this fascinating on many levels. First of all, Brian Mulroney was much of a fan of either Pierre Trudeau or Jean Chrétien in at a certain time, and now he's done a lot of work with Pierre Trudeau's son Justin on the free trade file, and he's recommending Chrétien to Trudeau as an envoy to China.
Yeah, well, you know, I covered Mulroney for a long time, and I always thought he had kind of a unstated or understated admiration for Pierre Trudeau. And this is really interesting. I mean, you know, Jean Chrétien was Prime Minister of Canada when the Chinese started opening the doors. And, you know, he became famous for leading these Team Canada missions over there, economic trade missions. You know, he'd bring premiers with him and business leaders and experts. And, you know, he drummed up a lot of business for Canada and Canadian companies in China and the other way around as well. And over the years, of course, trade has multiplied with China to the point where it's become a very significant trading partner for Canadian firms. But Chrétien really made his yards before President Xi took power. And he is a much different character from the leaders that were in place during Chrétien's time in office and during the Team Canada era. He's a far more ideological leader, far more authoritarian, much less respectful of Western interests, and very determined, it would appear, to make China the dominant economic and political power in the world. So, things have changed, and, so it may not be as simple as sending good old Jean Chrétien over to shoot the breeze and tell jokes with the Chinese in hopes of getting these guys out. But it does suggest that Canada has to come up with some novel approaches to break the logjam in relations with China.
All right, let's talk about Andrew Scheer. First of all, he apparently turned down an invitation to the D-Day ceremony in France on Thursday so he could attend an event at the University of Regina where members of his family were receiving honorary degrees. Do you think that this matters? Should he have been in France instead?
Well, you know, that's obviously his call. But it seems to me that he's missed a political opportunity there to some degree. I mean, you know, these D-Day ceremonies are you know, popular in the public. They express respect and support for military veterans of the past and the present. And they're important symbolically, I think, to express solidarity with the other countries in NATO and in terms of Canada's place in the world. So going to an honorary degree ceremony, which they'll barely even be visible, certainly doesn't seem like very good politics. So evidently it's a personal decision by Mr. Scheer to do that. But it is mystifying politics. Maybe he didn't want to look like second fiddle to Justin Trudeau. I mean, because he would be. He'd just be one of the people in the back of the crowd when the pictures were taken. And perhaps he felt that was not... a due respect for his lofty position as leader of the opposition.
All right. Ontario is going to be a key battleground in the federal election in the fall, obviously. Doug Ford's government has adjourned the legislature at Queen's Park in Toronto until after the federal election, an unusually long break of 5 months. And some people are asking questions about whether this has something to do with the federal election. Did Andrew Scheer ask Doug Ford to do that? He says no. Other people are suggesting that this is an attempt to keep Doug Ford quiet or that it's about freeing people up to campaign for the Conservatives. And the Toronto Star has a poll out this morning that shows that people in Ontario are less likely to vote for Andrew Scheer because of the first year of Doug Ford as Premier of Ontario. He was actually elected 1 year ago today. So what do you think is going on here?
Well, you know, it's there's certainly, you know, every indication that the Ford government, or certainly Ford himself, have lost a lot of support and popularity in Ontario. They are kind of blundering around, hacking and chopping in sort of shades of Mike Harris. You'll recall Harris was soundly kicked out of office when his time came. And, I mean, they elected the NDP, you know, so there was quite a reaction. I don't know if the same sort of currents are running through politics in Ontario now. And I'm not sure I totally buy this poll that the Star published this morning either. But, I mean, I can see some merit in keeping Ford going around to barbecues or beer drinking events or whatever he'll do all summer, rather than mucking about in federal politics where he has zero traction outside of Ontario, believe me. So but then again, I think the provinces are trying to play a role for the Conservatives this time. I mean, you've seen Jason Kenney says he's going to campaign in Ontario. Brian Pallister is making supportive moves in Manitoba for the federal Conservatives. So, I mean, I think what we're seeing is a fairly concerted, broadly based effort among Conservatives and Conservative governments in Canada to campaign for Andrew Scheer, because I think they see this as a very important election and as an opportunity to get rid of the Trudeau Liberals.
Yeah, it's interesting because often in provincial politics goes one way and federal politics goes another. So it's not unusual for there to be different parties in power in provincial legislatures, especially Ontario's and on Parliament Hill. The Star poll, of course, was asking all Ontario residents, even those who likely would have no chance of voting Conservative, whether the actions of Ford's government would have an impact on their choice. And some of the people who said yes to that presumably were not. We're people who are going to vote Liberal or NDP or Green Party anyway.
Yeah, and there's still some time before the election. And, you know, I think over the summer, people do tend to forget about politics. Let's face it, it's way more fun going to the beach. But, you know, there's it's going to be stirring away, and the party militants, as they would say in Quebec, the active members will be working during the summer, obviously getting ready for the fall election. And but a lot of that will go on behind the scenes, and the roles of the leaders will be to go around and just try to shore up support and build bits here and there where they can. Ontario, obviously, there's so many seats available, and the ridings align so well between federal and provincial that I think it's going to be really busy in Ontario, just maybe not on the headline-grabbing front, but in the trenches, as we say.
Yeah. All right, Dan, great to have your comments on all of this today. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
All right, Mark. Take care.
That's author and op-ed columnist for the Chronicle-Herald, Dan Legere.
Our focus on calling the inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls was very much on putting an end to this ongoing national tragedy.
Now let's take a look at what political columnists and commentators are writing about today. In the Globe and Mail, Elizabeth Renzetti argues, when it comes to racism against Indigenous people, we don't want to look in the mirror. Renzetti writes, with the final report of the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls, I thought for a moment that we would have the strength to look into that mirror honestly. I thought that Canadians, who love to trumpet our diversity when the world is watching, would sit back with humility and introspection and accept the education born of other people's suffering. Instead, there has been a rush to judgment, most of it negative. In Maclean's, Andrew McDougall asks if a deferred prosecution agreement is still on the table for SNC-Lavalin. McDougall writes, the Prime Minister owes Canadians an explanation on the way forward for SNC before the election, but the relative silence from all sides suggests the company knows not to ask until November of this year, when the court process will still be ongoing. One suspects that if the Liberals are re-elected, the DPA is as good as gold. At iPolitics, Alan Freeman argues, Andrew Scheer's energy independence pledge shows a lack of understanding of Canadian oil markets. Freeman writes, while Andrew Scheer's vow to end foreign oil imports may sound good to some Alberta voters, it shows a fundamental lack of understanding of how Canada's oil markets work and how trade contributes to the economy in a complex and interconnected world. The new conservatives like Doug Ford, Jason Kenney, and Andrew Scheer prefer simple solutions, even if they are ill-considered and a bit crazy, but may attract a few votes. Now, here's what's coming up on Canada's political agenda. The Senate has narrowly saved the Trudeau government's legislation for an oil tanker ban on the northern BC coast. But as CPAC's Martin Stringer reports, the saga of the bill in the Senate still isn't over.
Mark, the Transport Committee of the Senate had proposed a barrage of amendments which basically gutted the government's proposed tanker ban on the North BC coast. But last night, in the whole Senate, a majority of independent senators and Senate Liberals rejected the committee's report and basically saved the bill from evisceration. However, Bill C-48 still hasn't passed the whole Senate, and it's expected that there will be still some amendments proposed to the tanker ban legislation during the third reading debate, which the Senate still has to hold. But it's now far more likely than not that the tanker ban will go ahead. In another development, also last night, the Senate did pass another committee's 180 amendments to the government's other major piece of energy and environmental legislation, Bill C-69. That's the new environmental assessment framework. So while that bill survives, it comes back to the House of Commons with major changes. So the government and the Liberals in the House of Commons will have to decide whether they accept or not those major changes to C-69. So Mark, the two keystone pieces of Trudeau government's balancing act between environmental protection and the energy and resource sector are still very much in play in these last days of Parliament sitting.
Thanks, Martin. Also today, the Prime Minister will meet with the President of France in Paris, followed by a roundtable discussion with business leaders before boarding a flight back to Ottawa. In Inuvik, Northwest Territories, Environment Minister Catherine McKenna will make an announcement on an Inuit-led climate change strategy. International Trade Diversification Minister Jim Carr will speak with journalists via teleconference from his trade mission to Japan and South Korea. Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland will host Cuba's Minister of Foreign Affairs in Toronto. And Minister of Infrastructure François-Philippe Champagne will make an announcement in Latuque, Quebec. And that's CPAC Today in Politics for Friday, June the 7th. Tune into Primetime Politics Weekend on CPAC for coverage of all the week's events. Our podcast returns Monday morning. Have a great weekend.